New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Welcome, dear listeners, to New Dimensions Radio. Today, we dive into the heart of what makes us human, our relationships. They can provide the greatest comfort, solace, sense of belonging and purpose in the world, and at the same time reflect our deepest wounds and insecurities, and therefore provide us with the perfect crucible for transformation and growth. Joining us is Terry Real, an internationally recognized family therapist and author of Us, in which he explores how within a culture of toxic individualism, we can better navigate our relationships as a spiritual practice through something he calls relational mindfulness. He teaches that we're not isolated beings, but deeply connected to one another and the world, whether we remember this or not. Terry is the founder of the Relational Life Institute, which offers online courses and in-person workshops for couples, individuals, parents, and professionals. He is the author of Us, Getting Past You and Me to Build a More Loving Relationship. Join us for the next hour as we explore how to build stronger, more meaningful connections with those around us with our guest, Terry Real. I'm speaking with Terry, who is in Costa Rica on this Valentine's Day. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Welcome, Terry.
Hola, I'm Costa Rica.
So glad to have you here. So I'm looking forward to hearing about your vision for changing the world by becoming more relational with ourselves and those in our lives. But first, I'm wondering if you can walk us back a bit with the historical path you took before you became a couples therapist, and how early can we go to find the seeds where you became who you are today?
I tease and say I started my career as a family therapist at about age 4 in my dysfunctional family. And like most traumatized kids, I developed what Alice Miller called the gift of very strong EQ, because I had to do what I could to regulate these crazy people called my parents. I then was a hippie. I'm a 60s kid. Went through all that, drugs, spirituality, and then into psychology. I spent 4 years in a PhD program in comparative literature and left with the highly lucrative degree of a master's in comparative literature. Almost PhD, but I left. I moved from New York to Boston, wrote a novel, drove a cab. Got a job in a loony bin because I'd been shot at twice driving a cab, and I thought I'd do something better. It was the 70s, still sort of the spirit of the 60s, so I was in a psychiatric unit in Somerville, Mass., but with more responsibility than we would give a fully trained degree person these days. I ran groups, I supervised people. And I fell in love with therapy. Travis Glenn, I say I became a therapist in order to garner the skills I needed to have the conversation with my father, who would not talk, but I got him. And he opened up and told me his story. And in so doing, I said, I became a therapist to get the skills I needed to have the conversation with my dad I needed so that I would not become him.
Terry, I'm so touched to hear that story, just the rich variety of experience that brought you here. As you were doing the work at that time and becoming a therapist, was this intention of talking to your dad front and center, or did that recognition come later?
No, it's like a Zen koan, you know, the riddle that you meditate on. The Zen koan, my father was a depressed, angry, violent man. Mm-hmm. And he was the son of a depressed, angry, violent man. And I'm here to tell you, I have two sons, 33 and 36, and they do not say that. And that is the greatest achievement of my life.
That is beautiful. That is such the healing that we need in the world. I'm wondering, were you ever able to have the conversations that you wanted to with your father?
To a degree. At 27, he did tell me his story. His mother died when he was 8. He had a brother 2 years younger. In a fit of depression, in the depression, his father lost his store and lost everything. They were staying with his father's brother. His aunt was pretty mean to everybody. In a fit of depression, his father took him to the garage with his little brother and turned on the car and told him to get in and go to sleep. And my father knew this was wrong. And he physically fought his father, and his shoe broke the window of the car, and he grabbed his little brother, and he got out. And the next day, Aunt Sylvie had made up a story about his stealing from her daughter, and he was exiled to his elderly grandparents who lived 6 miles away at the edge of Philadelphia at 10. And he would walk 6 miles to school, have dinner with his father and brother and aunt and a cousin, and then walk 6 miles back to go to bed. And that's what he did his whole life, his childhood.
Thank you so much for sharing this heartbreaking story. And thank you for the resilience that you've developed in yourself and through that, the work and the methods and the concepts and the inspiration that you have for making this world a better place.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm really, really touched to hear how you got here.
It's been hard won. And then I became a family therapist. I became an individual therapist to heal myself, and I became a family therapist to learn how the hell to have a goddamn relationship, because I was completely clueless. And it took years of training. As a, you know, there's a saying, therapists need to be in therapy 40 hours a week. It took years of training for me to. And then I was largely dissatisfied with what the state of the art had to teach. And I was 30.
Okay. Yeah. You were dissatisfied with what the promise of therapy was at that point, and saw there was something new to offer.
Yes. If I may, it'll be a while before it comes out, but I just finished filming a what will be hopefully a docuseries on RLT and my life. And it includes me at 34 in family therapy with my mom and dad. I hadn't seen this thing for 40 years. And what I saw was in about the family therapist was sort of going on intellectually, burbling away. And 34-year-old me sidelined the therapist, went right for my dad, and began doing with my dad pretty much what I now teach people to do. It just, I needed to figure out how to get through to people like my dad and my mom. I say that every man in therapy that I heal is my father, and every man I don't heal in therapy is my father. I changed the legacy.
I'm really glad you got to have some of these conversations with him and really solidify what you're offering. That's a big statement, that everyone you work with is your father in a way. And so it kind of invites the question to that, you know, what's the right relationship to masculinity? What is the right relationship to this dynamic that we become a parent and we don't know what the tools are actually?
I have a pretty radical position. I don't really believe there is such a thing as masculinity. I mean, physiologically, of course. Science has never done a great job of proving that X qualities are masculine and Y qualities are feminine. There's just way too much variation in real human beings for that. My model, I believe that what we call masculine and feminine is largely socially constructed. And I talk about patriarchy. Patriarchy is the water and we are the fish. My pal Gabor Mate told me a joke. He said, there's an old fish who's swimming by and he sees two younger fish. He says, hi guys, how's the water? And he swims off and the two fish look at each other and go, water?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're the fish and it's the water. And there's a patriarchy, it has a gender binary. I believe in whole human beings. And the first thing we do is what one of my great mentors, Olga Silverstein, called the great divide. We have ours. Half of these qualities are male, half of these are female. We know what they are. The second ring of patriarchy is traditionally we exalt masculine qualities and devalue feminine qualities. Take this in for a minute. What this means is that the essential relationship between masculine and feminine in Western culture is contempt. What it means to be a man is to not be a girl. Nancy Turtle, it's a negative identity. Not being vulnerable, not being girly. It's not a positive identity, it's an avoidance. And then the third ring of patriarchy, which influences my therapy, is what I call the core collusion. And this is kind of ugly. Whoever is on the quote-unquote feminine side of the equation has a deep compulsion to protect the disowned fragility of whoever's on the masculine side, even at their own detriment. And that's true if we're talking about a child to a traumatizing perpetrator. It's true if you're talking about heterosexual relations.
Well, when you put it this way, it just makes so much sense that we're looking at what could become a healthy integration of these traditionally thought of binaries to hold them all in ourselves, whether we're biologically male or female or transgender these days.
Yeah, I want whole people. It pisses me off when people say, oh, Terry wants to feminize men. No, I don't. I want strong, big-hearted men. I want smart, sassy, sexy women. I want us all to be all of the qualities that nature and God has given us.
This is beautiful. Despite our upbringing, what culture taught us, this availability is something we can cultivate. And we'll be talking about that more at our next segments. I'm speaking with Terry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to terryreal.com. That's TerryReal.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website. newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with our guest, Terry Real, and we're speaking today about finding the wholeness in each of us and what we might need to do to get there.
Well, first, a couple of aerial views. One is this. I started off the book this way. Neurobiology teaches us that the idea of a freestanding individual is wrong. We are a social species. We are born to be relational. Relational connection is our birthright. It's how we function best as a species. It puts years on your life physically. The lack of social connection, a new research says that, is the equivalent of smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes a day. This is not just about your quality of life. It's about staying alive to begin with. It's essential, but we don't live that way. And I talk about the two essential mistakes of Western civilization that we're all swimming in. One, we are individuals. We are apart from nature. That's what the word individual means. And two, this is patriarchy. We're not just apart from nature, we're above it, and we can dominate it, we can control it. If you're a man, the control tends to be overt. Sit down, shut up, and do it. If you're a woman, you're traditionally socialized to be indirect. I'm sorry, but that's called manipulative, codependent, enabling. But in either case, what I want people to do is to wake up to what I call ecological wisdom. Ecological humility. Our relationships are our biospheres. We're not above them, dummy. We're in them. We breathe them. You can indulge a temper tantrum over here in your ecosystem, but you'll breathe in your partner's resentment, lack of passion, whatever, over there. You're inextricably linked. You can't escape. You know. So when we start thinking ecologically, relationally, they're synonyms. Everything changes. For example, if one of you wins and the other one loses, you both lose. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of politics here, but I always think of Israel and Palestine. If one of you is deprived of, you know, fundamental rights, they're going to wage war with the other one. It's just, you can't run away from each other. And it's the same thing in a marriage. If the loser will make the winner pay for. This is not idealism. It's real politics. So things like this. When you think relationally, the answer to the question who's right and who's wrong is irrelevant. The answer is who cares? The real question is how are you and I going to work this thing in a way that works for both of us? So once we start living relationally, the language changes, the thinking changes, and even the tools can I tell you a story? I
know. Please do.
I love to tell a story. It's a true story. This is a classic heteronormative fight. She to him. You're a reckless driver. Him to her. No, I'm not. You're too nervous. She to him. No, you're reckless. You do that. No, you're nervous with your sister. This is what I call an objectivity battle. Who's right and who's wrong? Okay. One session with me. This is a true story. She to him. Honey. Why don't you start with that? Honey, I know you love me. Listen, call me nervous, Nelly. Tell me I'm neurotic. Maybe. I don't care. When I am in the car with you and you weave in and out, tailgate people, go above the speed limit, I drive myself crazy. You're driving. You may know that you're in control, but I don't know that, honey. And I just get, I'm a nervous, look, I know you adore me. Drive the way you want when you're on your, but when I'm in the car as a favor to me, could you please slow down and drive more conservatively? And him to her, swear to God. Ready? Sure. And what could have been a fight that went on for 40 years is settled in 10 minutes, but it's not about win, lose, right, wrong. It's about humbly from the eye, subjectively, as a favor to me, you love me, would you? Honey, of course I will. Boom.
You're talking about prioritizing not the objectivity of facts, who's right, who's wrong, but that there is, we put relationship first. We put the softness and the kindness and attunement first. And I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners a bit of the practice of your relational mindfulness with first consciousness, second consciousness, of how we might actually start to make a shift if we can't be in a session with you personally.
Yes. Well, all relationships are an endless dance of harmony, disharmony, and repair. I got this from Ed Tronick, the infant observational researcher who looked at mothers and little baby, closeness, then there's a burp or gas, and then everybody goes crazy, and then the nipples accept, and everybody goes back to closeness again. Over and endlessly repeat, like walking, balance, imbalance, balance. And this is the rhythm of all relationships, including adult, intimate, the sexual relationship. Now, our culture doesn't teach us how to get from disharmony back into repair because it doesn't even acknowledge that disharmony exists. You're talking to the guy who coined the phrase normal marital hatred. And I want to tell you, I've gone around the world for 30 years talking about normal marriage. Not one person has ever come backstage and said, Terry, what do you mean by that? It's okay. That disharmony phase hurts. Oh my God, this is a terrible mistake. I'm trapped. We all marry our unfinished business. We fall in love with a god or goddess, an angel who's going to complete us and help us and heal us. James Franco, the father of family, a couple therapy, said, the day you turn to the person sleeping next to you and go, oh my God, I've been had. This is not who I fell in love with. This is a dreadful mistake. That, says Franco, is the first day of your real marriage. So how do we negotiate that? How do we negotiate the collision of your imperfections and your partner's? The world of individualism and patriarchy teaches us nothing. In fact, it fills us with a lot of crap. So let me give you one example. Under patriarchy, you can either be connected, accommodating, compassionate, quote-unquote feminine, or you can be assertive, independent, strong, stand up for yourself, quote-unquote masculine. But you can't be both at the same time. Let me say it again. You can be accommodating, you can be powerful, but you can't be both at the same time. Because power is power over, not power with. When you step into power under patriarchy, you break connection. And one of the things I say is that leading men, women, and non-binary folk into intimacy is synonymous with moving beyond patriarchy, because patriarchy was never built for intimacy. Was built for stability. So, how do you do it? Loving power. Soft power. And none of us know, I have to teach people, and my therapist and teach people how to do it. It's how to stand up for yourself and cherish your partner and the relationship in the same breath. It's the difference, Travis Glenn, between saying, I don't like how you're talking to me, stop it. Well, which is fair enough. And saying, hey, listen, man, I want to hear what you have to say. I can't listen when you're yelling. Tone it down, because I want to hear it. Could you tone it down so I could hear it? Two ways of saying the same damn thing, but which of those two do you think is going to be more successful? So, of course, I have a story. Can I tell you a story?
Let's hear a good story.
Loving power. So a couple came in, young heterosexual couple, and it was like a classic. She wanted sex none of the time. He wanted sex all the time. So like any good therapist, I get them off of the position into what it means. And like a lot of women, she had come to see sex as a chore. It was divorced from her own desire. He was demanding and pouting. And underneath those demands was a typical male deal. He filtered all of his vulnerable emotional needs through sex. When they had sex, when he could give her an orgasm, he'd done his job. He was a good husband. She loved him. They were close. Okay, they leave. True story. Come back 2 weeks later. We're done. Not all my therapy is one session. Only the ones I share. But anyway, we're done. Okay, tell me. Sure enough, just days after the session with me, he wants sex. Rather than going to the other side of the room, which is her usual, we talked about loving power. She walks over, puts her arm around, looks him in the eye and says this, honey, the first thing I want you to know is you are so attractive. You're such a sexy guy. You're such a manly guy. And yet you're so kind. You really work hard to please me. Oh, by the way, I don't have sex tonight. I adore you. I just think you're the cat's meow. We'll have sex later in the week, but I'm a little tired tonight. Anyway, I think you're great. Is that okay that we put off sex? And he looks at her, and for the first time in their marriage, he goes, sure. Because she had cloaked her no with so many yeses, he was fine. So there's a way of saying yes to the relationship and yes to the partner and stand up and assert yourself all at the same time. But under patriarchy, we move into what I call individual empowerment. And that's true for women under feminism, for 12-step cure of codependence, for therapy. I call it, I was weak, now I'm strong, go screw yourself. I am woman here. I'm going to speak. I found my voice. Bar the door. No, relational power is the next step. I was weak, now I'm strong. I'm going to stand toe to toe with you. This is what I want from you. Let me be clear. What could I give you to empower you to do that for me? Who sounds like that? We're a team. Let's work together.
I really love hearing this. It sounds rather than taking positions for other each side of the false binary that you're saying, let's bring the best of both. Let's maintain the softness. And also let's not make power wrong, but let's be in our power in a healthy way that serves from the softness.
That's beautiful. Yes. And that goes back to where we started with wholeness. You can be soft and in the same breath. You can be a whole human being. But as you enter into that kind of wholeness, and there, when I teach people to be relational, it's endless movements like this out of these binaries into something that's more mature and whole. When we do that, we move beyond the culture at large. We become pioneers.
And this is why I think that we're not going to get there on our own. We need to even hear that this is possibility from you, from a friend, a neighbor, or best of all circumstances, a parent, that we get to be the best of this. And no longer have contempt for what the harm which either side of the polarity has been causing.
That's right. And in family therapy, you talk about first order change and second order change. First order change is the rearrangement. Second order change is transformation. I don't want the devalued, quote-unquote, feminine to now move into the masculine and be as obnoxious as men have always been. I want to blow up the damn binary. I want us to be able to have it all. We really can. We can be open-hearted and assertive at the same time.
It's really such a gift that you've made your work available to the world in your books, in your workshops, in your online courses. And I feel so blessed to be having this conversation with you today. I'm speaking with Terry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to terryreal.com. That's TerryReal.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Terry Real. We've been talking about the wholeness that is possible when we bring the best of each so-called false polarity of masculine and feminine. But I want to talk a bit how these unhealthy places or these unskillful strategies came to be in place so innocently from each of us. We're talking about the adaptive child. And so I'm wondering if we can help our listeners understand the innocence of how we develop our strategies that may not actually be useful.
Yes. As a couples therapist, when I'm sitting with a pair, I say the most important question is not what are the stressors, kids, money, whatever. A good couple can handle stress. And it's not even the choreography, which all couples therapists get trained at. The more she pursues, the more he distances, the more he distances, the more she pursues, the vicious circle. The most important question is this one. Which part of you am I speaking to? And there are three parts of us in relational life therapy, the field I've created. The first is the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that develops last 26 years old. For you moms with ADHD boys out there, have faith. They can shape up at 26. I'm telling you, I've had one. That's a long maturation period. This is the part, this is the most evolved part of the brain, present based, stop, think, listen, choose. My friend Thomas Ubel says, to observe is to have choice, because you're in the part of the brain that can choose. But there are two subcortical parts of the brain that are all about trauma. Famously now, with all the focus on trauma, the wounded child part, amygdala limbic system, very primitive parts of the brain. When I do work, wounded children tend to be first moments of life to about 4 or 5, very young. The part of you that just experienced the abuse or neglect, totally reactive, totally flooded. Between this very mature part of you and this very immature part of you is a mediator. I call it the adaptive child, also subcortical, automatic, not thoughtful, not something that can be chosen, something that comes over you, but it feels like an adult. And almost all of the folks that I've worked with have lived most of their lives out of their adaptive children, thinking that it's an adult. The culture at large rewards adaptive children. I deal with a lot of high rollers, and they've done beautifully in the world and make a hash of their personal lives and don't sit comfortably inside their own skin, but wonders in the world. Our culture likes adaptive children. It gets nervous around wise adults. But the adaptive child is the you that you created to deal with whatever was being thrown at you. And it's an automatic knee-jerk response. The simplest way of describing it is fight, flight, or fix. Fight, screw me, screw you. Flight, particularly for you guys out there, you could be standing 6 inches away from your partner and still be fleeing. That's called stonewalling. It's a great predictor of divorce. And fix, which is not a mature, let me see what I can do to make things better. It's a compulsive, you know, codependent, oh my God, you're upset. I can't be happy. If you're not happy, I'll twist myself into knots. It's an anxious contortion to regulate whoever is around you.
And Terry, do you find that people take on all three, or do people focus really on one?
Well, it's different and different. You could be one with your kids, another with your boss, and another. But I want you, those listening, to pick one with your sexual intimate partner now. Not 10 years ago, but now. Fight, flight, or fix. Okay, so that's the broadest way of describing it, but we get more and more granular. We pick that adaptive child's relational dysfunction, the stance that you learned as a kid that you now bring into your current relationship that doesn't work. I say adaptive then, maladaptive now. And the best way to describe that is knowing a story. Can I tell you a story?
Please do.
I love to tell stories. This is my go-to adaptive child story. It's a true story. A couple on the brink, that's my beat. I deal with couples on the brink that no one else has been able to help. Couple on the brink, he's a liar. She's fed up. 10 years, she's had it. He's the kind of guy, she says, if you ask him what color his shoes are, he'll look down and say they're sneakers, even though they're not. He lies about everything. And for you therapists listening, he's the kind of guy you work with. You say to him, the sky is blue. He goes, well, it's aquamarine. He's not going to give it to you. So between what she reports and the way he's maneuvering with me in the office, I got him. I know his relational stance. His relational stance is he has a black belt in evasion. That's his adaptive child. He's an evader. So when you think relationally, it's fallen off a log. When you're not, it sounds brilliant. But I have a saying, show me the thumbprint and I'll tell you about the thumb. He's an evader. Who was he evading? I say to him, who tried to control you growing up? Sure enough, my father. military man, how I sat, how I ate, what courses I took, what friends I had, the clothes on my back, everything. I said, how did you deal with this controlling father? He looks at me and smiles. Now that's resistance. That's health. That smile. He says, guess what? I lied. My dad said, don't play with Henry. I told him I was playing with Frank and I went and played with Henry. Smart boy. I teach my students, always be respectful of the exquisite intelligence of the adaptive child. You did back then exactly what you needed to do to preserve your integrity and wholeness. Smart little boy, good for you. I explain this to the guy, and I say, I have a saying. Adaptive then, maladaptive now. You're not that four-year little boy. She's not your dad. They come back 2 weeks later, absolutely true story, hand in hand, we're done. It's over. It's finished. And it was. I checked in with her 6 months later, it was. He never lied again to tell me the story. He says, between the last session and this, his wife sent him to the grocery store to get, say, 12 things. He came back true to form with 11. She says to him, where's the pumpernickel? He says, I want your listeners to feel this. He says, every muscle and nerve in my body was screaming to say they were out of it. And in this moment, my wife, Belinda, the great family there, was called these moments of relational heroism. In this moment, I took a breath. I thought of you, Terry. We therapists can lend our clients our prefrontal cortex. I thought of you. I looked my wife in the eye and I said, I forgot the damn pumpernickel. She looked at me, true story, and burst into tears and said, I've been waiting for this moment for 25 years. And he was done. That is moving the adaptive child to the wise adult.
I'm taking a breath here. It reminds me of a quote from a previous New Dimensions guest that we have, Krishnamurti. True liberation is freedom from our automatic responses.
I've been quoting that for 30 years.
Well, here's also my question around this. What I'm so curious about. For those guiding others, for therapists or coaches doing this work, does the maladaptive temptation of the automatic response ever fully go away? Or do we just stop answering the door when it's knocking?
I'm going to give you a more loving version of not answering the door.
Okay.
An inner child kicks up. And you'll know it because it's reactive and it's intense and it's compulsive. When an inner child kicks up, you want to put your arms around them, put them on your lap, hear them out, and take their sticky hands off the steering wheel. You're not driving the bus. And I do imaginative inner child work where I would have the wise adult Travis Glenn. You turn to the 4 or 5 year old boy that's driving the show and relate to him and say, it's okay now. You don't have to do whatever. You don't have to lie anymore. You're not with you. I'm here now. And that is the healing trauma work that we do in relational life therapy.
Yeah.
And you do it over and over and over again.
Yes.
I say maturity comes when we deal with our inner children and don't foist them off on our partners to deal with. And I'm very concrete about it. I say to my patients, when Belinda's coming at me, we're both fighters. When Belinda's coming at me with anger, I literally visualize my little 8-year-old Terry. I've got a composite. I've worked with him a ton. And I put him behind my back. He holds on to my shirt. And I say to him, we have a deal. I will protect you from Belinda's anger. Between her and you is me, my big 73-year-old body. You're safe back there. That's my part of the deal. Here's your part of the deal. You let me handle Belinda. Don't you do it. You'll make a mess of it. I can do better than you. Got a deal? Deal. And I want to say this last thing for the spiritual people here. I worked with a beautiful man, a Hollywood star, and he's been in years and years of AA recovery and has that spiritual higher power thing going. And he takes his inner little boy out three or four times a day and puts his arms around him and talks. Every time he gets reactive, he does this. And the last time he came to me, it was so beautiful, was something that was really terrifying to him. He held the little boy and he felt his higher power holding both of them.
Yeah.
Let me give you two big ideas. I would like people to learn more and more detail, but here are two big ideas. One, Travis Glenn, if your listeners get nothing today but what I'm about to say, it will be time well spent. If you take this in and live it, your lives literally may be transformed as of today. Here's the sentence. There is no redeeming value in harshness. There is no redeeming value in harshness. If it's harsh, it's off. There is nothing that harshness does that loving firmness doesn't do better. Stand up to that inner critic inside of you, but don't meet harshness with harshness. Meet harshness with firm love. That's just the adaptive child part of you trying to parent you as it best it knows how. Get harshness out of your life. I talk about full respect living. Ask yourself, is what I'm about to say or do fall below the level of basic respect to the person I'm with? If the answer is yes, that's okay, we're human, but shut up. Take a break, take a walk. That's relational mindfulness. To cultivate the practice of shifting out of your reactive, adaptive child into your centered adult. The revolution here is that can be cultivated. And mindfulness exercises, meditation is a beautiful help. Relational mindfulness is bringing mindfulness practice into our relationship.
That is so beautiful. I'm already thinking of those in my life on that I want to keep practicing this with, just at your inspiration. So I'm really taking this in. I'm speaking with Terry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to terryreal.com. That's TerryReal.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with our guest, Terry Real. We're talking how to bring more relational mindfulness to our interactions with ourselves and our partners. And Terry, I'm wondering if we can share now what the larger vision and purpose that you have for bringing this work for healing the world as a whole on a grander scale.
Well, let's start with our everyday lives. I've been a spiritual practitioner for over 50 years. I meditated for over 50 years. I've had many, many teachers in different traditions. For about 7 years, I sat with a Zen master, and I would meet with him for an hour. We'd talk about my life for 15 minutes, and then we'd meditate together for 45 minutes. And I was drafting. I mean, meditating with this guy was like plugging into a socket, but we talked about my life. And I was just writing my first book on male depression. I don't want to talk about it. Back in the 90s. He said, how are you? I said, I am so high. I am manic. I haven't slept in 3 days. I'm writing about the essential to masculine movement from shame to grandiosity, from helplessness to superiority from hurt to attack. I think I've got the essential dynamic of male violence in the world and how to stop it. How would you see that from a Zen perspective? And he looked at me and smiled and said, well, how have you been treating Belinda?
Exactly.
And I was so high on myself, I'd really been kind of a jerk. But so start here. Start here. We may not be able to bring peace to the Middle East or to the Ukraine, but we can bring peace to our bedrooms and living rooms. So start right where you are. That's my first, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh spoke about doing good warm hand to warm hand. So before we move to the abstract level, live it. Live it here. The choice is in this moment. The work of relationship is moment to moment. In this moment, am I going to go with my automatic response or am I going to take a break and go for peace? We can make peace with ourselves and in our heads as well. Make peace with yourself. Nowadays, if I'm harsh in my head, I will lean into that little Terry and I will say, listen, you may have something to teach me, but say it kindly. I'm not going to listen unless I feel like you're on my side, and I won't. I'll turn on the TV and won't. But say it kindly and I'll listen. So we can tame these critters. We really can. In terms of the big picture, I'm not Pollyanna about this. I'm actually quite, I think we're at war. I think globally, we are at war. I think that globally, democracy is on the ropes. It's not just America. It's all over the world. There has been a stunning rise of patriarchy, of autocratic, those traditional dominant values, the strong man, in no matter whether it's a female or male body, but the leader as strong man, as dictator, as thug, as autocrat. And people like it. People are gravitating toward it. So the values of liberal democracy are in some ways being really challenged across the world right now. At the same time, our planet is getting hotter year by year. If we don't wake up to ecological humility, we are going to leave our kids and grandkids a very, very troubled world. If any world, habitable world at all. There are progressive forces like you, and bless you for this work, Travis Glatt. There are forces of people who understand interconnectedness and relationality and globalization. There are forces that are fear-based. They're like the adaptive child part of humanity, and it's about me, me, mine, America first. It is all about threat and one up, one down. We are at war. And depending on whether progressive forces win or retrogressive forces win, I literally believe the fate of our world is in the balance. And it's not off in the future. It's right here, right now.
I'm really touched that you are bringing in an awareness that your work isn't just isolated and cozy outside of the larger context, as we're bringing hope for ourselves to move in our wise adult, that we're also aware of each microcosm, macrocosm that we're a part of. So I'm really glad you're bringing this into the conversation.
Well, thank you. You know, I end toward the end of the new book, Asana, I talk about coming out from under the great lie. And the great lie is that one human being could be essentially superior or inferior to another human being. The lie of one up and one down, but we are not over anyone or under anyone, we are with. And that includes ourselves, our bodies, our partners, our kids, other races, other peoples, and it includes nature and ultimately spirit. We will give up the grandiose delusion of dominance, and we will surrender to the humility of understanding we're not above it, we're in it. It's in our enlightened self-interest to take care of it, or we will die. It's just that simple. And I think the fate of the world hangs in the balance. I really do.
It's a beautiful word, surrender. I'm thinking of my own maladaptive child, either knowing one up and one down in myself, and finding the place where I needed to find my agency and my capacity to do this work from neither of these places, but ride the surfing wave in the middle of what's being asked for you. And again, I'm coming back to the word surrender that you just said.
Yes, I started with my Zen koan of what is a right relationship to power, given my abusive father, particularly male power, particularly white male power. And at 73, I feel like I have an idea. And my metaphor is art. You practice your scales and practice your scales. The concert comes, you sit down at the piano, inspiration passes through you. Don't pretend it's bigger, it's smaller than it is. Let the bigness speak through you. I'm doing that right now with you. Let the be a good vessel and be proud of yourself as a vessel. But what passes through you is not you, it's spirit. Lao Tzu, 6,000 years ago, the master steps out of the way and lets the Tao speak for itself. So be proud of your craft and don't be egotistical about the inspiration.
I'm just taking a breath with that. If we can see how this applies to one of your statements, that we're also, speaking of the Tao, constantly in relationship to the cycles of harmony, disharmony, and repair, so that we can also be available for that. So when there is disharmony, that it also doesn't throw us off course, that we realize this is also part of the cycle. This is what happens. And then we trust our own capacity that repair is right around the corner if we surrender to relational mindfulness.
That's right. Let's not get too hung up on the word surrender. If you're one up, the surrender means you yield. And we have a saying, we want the mighty to melt, we want the weak to stand up. So if you're in the one-up position, surrender means to yield. If you're in the one-down position, vulnerability may be to assert yourself. It may be the opposite of yielding, but it's also a kind of surrender. It's doing what the biosphere needs from you in this moment.
That needs to be heard. Thank you so much. Esther Perel also said that she hopes to have 6 marriages in her lifetime, right? But to the same man.
Yes.
And I'm thinking this relational statement can also be applied to ourselves as we're moving through our own childhood and adolescence and then struggling in our 20s and wrestling and finding it's not working, that there's also 6, maybe more versions of our own evolution within our own being.
I love that. That's called growth and transformation. You know, and by the way, I'm teaching with Esther all week. I call her my sister partner in crime, Esther. We teach a lot. But the Bob Dylan, he not busy being born is busy dying. We're either growing or we're succumbing. And growth means dismemberment and resurrection. Growth means that there's a dissolution of the comfortable what is. And who the hell, there's a scramble. I mean, who knows where we're going to go. If you don't get past the dissolution to the next phase, then the system dies. If you do get past the dissolution to the next phase, then the system transforms. And we live through transformation. We live through suffering, death, and rebirth of ourselves and of our relationships. I'll tell you this. Because it's kind of, I want to be light. At any given moment, Belinda and I either will be liable to look at one another and smile and even bow and say, I want to thank you for this opportunity to work on myself.
a daily opportunity or minute by minute opportunity if we're living with our partner and we don't know what temperature to keep the thermostat even.
Yeah, exactly.
The smaller things come in. That's good. We don't know what the outcome's going to be. Who knows what resolution's going to come in evolution?
I've been deeply, one of my great mentors, P. Melody, was a 12-step pioneer. I've been deeply influenced by 12-step and spirit. And all of the people I work with live the serenity prayer, as I try to as well. You step up, you do your best, it goes where it goes, and you have something. You know, Einstein late in life was asked, what's the most important question? He said, is the universe a friendly place? To let go and grow, you need some faith that it's going to be all right, and that's spiritual development.
Terry, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. I've been speaking with Terry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to terryreal.com. That's TerryReal.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3808.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973. Thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.